Well, from New Year's Day in cinemas, you'll be able to go to see We Live in Time. It's a truly lovely new film directed by Cork native John Crowley, who's also directed Intermission and Brooklyn. It stars Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh as a couple who meet when she literally knocks him down in her mini. It's a love story, and it's also about childbirth and serious illness and ambition and taking a chance. John Crowley, good morning to you.
Good morning, Miriam.
I really loved it. Listen, tell me first of all about the two main characters in the movie, Tobias and Almut. They meet in quite a dramatic fashion.
They do. Yeah, it's in movie parlance, an unusual meet cute, which is the way that a romantic couple is meant to meet. And yeah, one literally crashes into the other, which is an unusual way to meet your life partner. But there you go.
And they're in their 30s when they meet. They've already, I suppose, lived life a bit. They're faced with different decisions about career and kids. More difficult decisions, I suppose, than, say, a couple of they met in their 20s.
I think it's one of the things that appealed to me about it is that you have two characters who have a bunch of complicated history, and them getting together and what they both want from life isn't the same thing, and it sort of felt like a grown-up story rather than a kind of more youthful story about romantic destiny where boy meets girl and it's happy ever after. It just felt more adult than that.
Yeah, and it really feels that. When you got the script yourself, which was written by Nick Payne, what were your first thoughts? I mean, did you want to make it from the get-go, or what were you thinking?
I found it very moving and very funny. And I knew Nick's work. I had directed a play by him at the Donmar Warehouse here in London about 7 years ago. And I love his work. And he has a wonderful eye for character and a huge heart as a writer. So anything he would write, I'd be very keen on. But when I started reading it, you know, and I spotted what it was about, I was slightly resistant to it, to be honest. You know, I thought, oh God, is this going to be just too sad? But there's, you know, no spoilers, but there's a birth scene in the middle of the film, which is one of the funniest things I've ever read. But it was also one of the most moving things I've ever read. And that combination of elements was the thing that sort of tipped me into absolutely saying this is the next year and a half of my life to make this film. So
No, and I suppose we also should explain to people it skips brilliantly, actually, from one period of their lives to another, and then back again. That is not an easy thing, I was thinking, for a director to plot.
I know, but it was one of the things that really appealed to me about it, is that it's got quite a sort of playful, formally inventive structure to it, and it skips around in time. And it's not just to be sort of clever, or, you know, it is about trying to show lots of different facets of a relationship, so that by the end of the film, you should feel like you've known these two people all your life, and that you've seen them go through a whole chunk of life rather than just one small section of it.
I was also struck by the casting. I mean, just how well suited Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh are. But you knew Andrew already, didn't you, John? Mm-hmm. You'd worked together before.
Yeah, we did. We right at the beginning of his career, I made a film, a TV film for Channel 4, but ultimately got released in cinemas, called Boy A. And that was the first leading role he had played. And he was astonishing in it, and went on and won all sorts of awards for it, and it sort of launched him off on his career to massive stardom. And we've kept in touch over the years, and we talked about a couple of other things, none of which ever quite came to fruition. But when I read the script, he really did strike me as being sort of spot on for it, because there's this sort of gentleness to Andrew, and he's at ease with his own emotions, and he's quite a sort of feminine bloke, if you know what I mean. He's no pushover, but he's also very honest about his own relationship to grief, and that's right there in the middle of the story as well. So he loved it as soon as he read it, and I also thought it was a great opportunity for him. He's very funny, Andrew, you know, and for him to show that side of his work as well was a great opportunity. Florence, I didn't know. I knew her work and loved her work, and she created so many astonishingly strong women in films. And I knew that she'd be able to handle that side of Almut, the character that she plays, who's this, you know, very successful, go-getting young chef. And in a way, the task for her was to see how she would handle the vulnerability of the character, which I think she's done beautifully. You know, it was a great opportunity for her as well.
Yeah, and I'll come back to her in one sec, because you mentioned there about Andrew, like he's very honest about his own grief. And I suppose you knew from the past, from working with him, John, he's funny, he's emotional, but there is a great depth to him, because he has talked, I know, as well about the grief he felt at losing his own mum to cancer.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, and it's very direct, that his relationship to his own grief, you know, and his ability to sort of mind that, because not everybody can do that in their acting as well. Then, I mean, it's one thing to feel it. It's another thing for it to actually be an emotional resource for you as an actor. His ability to do that without swamping the set, in it, as it were, is extraordinary. He has access to the full range of his very real and very lived emotions. And he's heartbreaking in it because of that, I think.
And Florence is so talented as well. I mean, when did you realise the casting of the two of them actually worked as well as you hoped it might? Because you're never sure, are you?
No, you never know. It's always a bit of a crapshoot, really. You know, you have to follow your instinct. And day two of rehearsals, to answer your question, is when I was like, "Oh my God, this is special," because you know, day one they were very nervous and they didn't know each other. They had met. They had presented an Oscar together, as you do.
Right? As you
do. So that was the first place they met. Imagine meeting this person that you're about to do a film with on the Dolby stage. And day two, when they were a bit more relaxed and eased into it, I began to see sparks flying in scenes. And then the task came in rehearsals to try and hold them back, to not let them get too emotional too quick. And you know, you only want the emotion to flow when the camera's pointing at the scene. So, that was when it began to get really special.
There's a very impactful scene, I found, and it's not a big spoiler, but Tobias shaves Almut's head. And I gather, Andrew, he did it for real. Florence agreed to it. So what was that like for you to direct and for the cameraman to film?
Terrifying for everybody, because it was something that we were going to get one shot at, you know. So the cameraman, you know, Stuart Bentley, who's my lovely DP, had organised this special rig with two cameras attached to each other, because he was like, if one fails, we're absolutely up the Swanee, you know. Andrew didn't want to practice with the clippers. He didn't want a lesson in how to shave someone's head, because he didn't feel Tobias would. So everybody was sort of arriving, you know, jangling with nerves. And but as it happened, everything went very well, and indeed the clouds cleared and the sun came out. Literally, as we were doing it, in the way that you know, if you're going to get lucky once, that's the day to get lucky with the weather. And what was very moving was the entire crew were genuinely moved at seeing Florence transformed, because it's a very intimate thing to shave someone's hair off. And she walked out of that scene looking radically different. And of course, the sort of implication of why that's happening in the story is also very moving. So, that was a very big day on set for everybody.
No, it's very moving and beautifully done. I think it'll resonate for many people watching it as well, who've gone through those experiences. There's also an amazing scene where their daughter is born. Rather unconventionally. Oh, you wouldn't choose this place to have your baby.
You would not.
And Tobias is a planner. He's there with a stopwatch, a notebook. It really doesn't go to his plan.
Life has other ideas about where this baby is going to be born. He is Mr. Planner. Yeah, he's got everything down to the wire. And that is part of the joke, the sort of cosmic joke of the film, is that one whole section of it is them waiting, as many, many parents have done, on the day of the delivery of a baby. And then suddenly, you know, it's the baby that decides the actual schedule. And, you know, they wait. And then suddenly they're out of time and it's game on, and the baby's going to be born right here, right now. So, yeah, it's very funny and very touching.
I know you love humour, though, don't you? So you must have loved the humour in that scene, did you?
I do. And it's a great thing, you know, to have in your sort of toolkit as a director. If you're telling a story, it's just, it sort of humanises everything. And also, I find that in the saddest situations, absurdity is never very far away, you know. I mean, I know it's a cliche that they say that we always laugh at funerals in Ireland and cry at weddings, but like a lot of cliches, there's probably some truth in it. Yeah.
Are they, that film, was it very intense to make? I mean, do you find films like that quite emotionally demanding for you?
I mean, the actual shooting of it was fun. to be honest, there was a lightness on set. That both actors are delightful human beings and they're funny. They're incredibly professional. And it would not take them long to get to the very direct emotional place they needed to get to. And so it wasn't a sort of like a therapy session on set or anything of the sort. There was a lot of laughter on that set. And I mean, editing it for 6 months, yeah, at the end of it, I was like, okay, I need to go and do something else for a living other than going to edit this every day. But, you know, there's a lot of big emotion in the film. But that's a privilege to get to work with that stuff. And you hope that it goes out and touches people that have experienced similar things.
Now, you're a Cork boy, as I know and many people know, but will you remind people of your own career trajectory, John? I mean, how did you get to this point? Where did it all start for you?
In UCC. I started directing plays for the Dramat, the Drama Society. And, I mean, like a lot of kids, thought I wanted to act. Didn't like acting as soon as I tried it, and certainly wasn't much cop at it anyway. So, but I directed a one-act play, and that was it for me. That sort of sealed the deal. And I always loved films at the same time, but that felt very exotic to me back then. The idea of ever getting to make a film felt very remote, whereas theatre was more immediate. And I carried on directing theatre very happily for about 10 years and between Dublin and the Abbey and the Gate. And then over in London at the National in the Donmar Warehouse, and then got my first opportunity to direct a film, which was Intermission, written by Margot Rowe.
Brilliant film.
Thank you.
Now, and I also mentioned Brooklyn in my intro to you. Mm-hmm. I know that Colm Tobin, he sent Saoirse Ronan a copy of the sequel Long Island. Were you sent a copy too? Are you in talks?
I was. I mean, look, I don't know. I'm very happy with the film I made. I'm very happy with Brooklyn. I love the book. It's a beautiful book.
Long Island.
Mm.
That sounds positive.
No, don't. I can't be saying that. I'm very happy with
the book,
the film I made of Brooklyn.
I hear you, John.
Even at that.
I hear you. And listen, what other projects are in the pipeline for you? You always move from one to the next, don't you?
I try to, yeah. I've got a few things sort of bubbling, but I haven't committed to one yet. So, you know, I'm going to stay vague and annoying about it, I'm afraid, until I know myself. But I've got a few things that I'm trying to get onto the starting blocks for next year.
Yeah, you probably deserve a bit of a rest anyway after that film.
I think I do.
Definitely. You've lived a long time in London. It's your home. I know it's where you live with your wife and your children. So will you be there for Christmas now?
Yes. Yeah. Christmas is here and my brother Bob will be with us. And which is lovely.
Bob was a great brother, wasn't he?
He was a great brother. He is a great brother.
Yeah.
He was. He was exciting and interesting and stimulating and just interesting and funny and kind of always, you know, like a lot of big brothers. He's the one who introduces you to all the important books, the important LPs, the important film, all the things which, you know, he's the one who gives you a smack on the head and says, wake up, kid, there's a big world out there. You know, everybody needs that when you're young and gormless at the age of 11. So he was and still is a huge figure for me.
So will you get home to Cork anytime soon?
Probably may not be until the new year now. I won't get back before Christmas. But, I mean, I try and get back as often as I can. I love it, you know. And Bob has a place in West Cork that we often go and visit him in, outside Skibbereen. And I love it. Love it there.
Well, director John Crowley, congratulations on the film. I loved it.
Thank you.
Happy Christmas to you and to all of
and
yours.
And to you, Miriam. Thank
Your
you so
movie,
much.
We Live in Time, starring Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh, is exclusively in cinemas from the 1st of January, and everyone should go and see it. Thanks for chatting to me this morning, John.
Pleasure.